Hey, everybody. It's Elaine. This is Wednesday, November 29th, 2017. It is the 12 p.m. Eastern Time Wednesday afternoon group call for parents of kids all ages. And today we're going to be talking about shifting expectations. And we're starting a little late, so it'll be a somewhat shorter recording today, but we've got a couple of people on the call, so let's start with check-ins. Brian, you want to kick us off?
Sure thing. So overall, I think doing pretty good. You know, Thanksgiving went well, and that's always a tough one because the change in routines, just with kids being out of school, we actually went down to Wichita for a couple days, but all in all, for our motley mix of kids in the family, I think it went really well, and this week's been busy. I think we had something Monday night and something last night, and then we've got something tonight, so it's busy. So with some successes, I think getting through those changes at Thanksgiving and everyone generally got along and had fun and cited a few things they really enjoyed about the Thanksgiving weekend and did well together with the oldest being home for college. I mean, that's a big success to celebrate, that, you know, the potential for Thanksgiving to be, you know, being stuck with your family and hating that didn't happen. So
awesome.
That's a success to celebrate. And then the challenge for Sunday now, the one where really our oldest daughter, who's 17, a high school junior, is really having just a kind of a tough time right now with some emotional regulation stuff, is just a little bit down on herself. And just a real puzzle. So I'm really going to kind of put my focus on her. And I think this kind of shifting the expectations is a great topic for that,
mm-hmm.
because I think she usually does so well and is such an adapter and so good about smoothing over things that we tend to expect more out of her. But then we sit back and say, okay, she's 17. She looks 21. Sometimes mentally and her executive function, she's really only 13 or 14. How do we help
right.
her with that? And we actually had a session on this week, and so I think it's really good to focus on that. Of what can we be doing to support her a little more in some of those areas rather than saying, well, she's always successfully overcome it and she's always done well, so we should expect it in these circumstances.
So the celebration is that Thanksgiving was great and the family enjoyed being together. And where I hear you taking aim is how to sort of meet your daughter where she is and provide support that's appropriate, developmentally appropriate.
Yeah, and if that's too broad, I mean, really, I think the support now is just with maintaining her kind of schedule and her balance of school, athletics, and home responsibilities.
Okay, got it. So that's great. I'm just having problems typing. So what I'm hearing is the place to take aim is to sort of rethink or reapproach for yourself. How do you provide appropriate support, sort of developmentally, to help her in that sort of life balance of all the different things that are expected of her?
Exactly, because I think lately she's felt kind of overwhelmed by life. And I think this part, she's kind of got herself feeling underwater and didn't know how to work her way forward and out of it. So we're focusing on that.
Great. Okay. Love that. And what I want to acknowledge, and I'm doing this as much for EB as for you, is to say, you know, as you started thinking it through, you got really clear that it was that you were taking aim on something too broad, and so narrowed it in to make it something more manageable. And that's great.
See, I'm much more coachable than my wife says I am.
Look at how much you're learning. And Evie, what about you? What do you want to celebrate today?
Well, I think what I want to celebrate today is my middle daughter who is just turned 9 in October, is the one with an ADHD diagnosis, although everybody has, the other two also have elements and executive function issues, and all of this is totally applicable to them too.
Right.
But she's been the one who has been really volatile, and she has been the one who has, she spent the past 9 months saying that she needed her own room and she couldn't stand being with her sister, and they had used to be, her sister is 6, and they used to sleep in the same bed when they got lonely and be quite close, and then she just went super negative, and but over, and she wanted her own room, but the only place was downstairs, and she was too scared to sleep downstairs by herself, and it was just this constant irritation for all of us. And she finally has decided that she is happy to share a room with her sister. She started getting along with her. They together worked to make the room so they each had their own private space and then shared space. And they slept in the same bed. She crawled up and slept in her sister's bunk bed for the first time in, I don't know, 9 months or a year. And it's just such a, she's been sort of coming down off her, I can't do anything right and I'm a terrible person, so I'm going to really
awesome.
Lean into that and into back into her actually quite sweet, if really energetic self. And that's been really wonderful to see. So that's what
I'm celebrating. That's a great celebration. I'm curious whether you can sort of pull back and get curious for yourself about, have you noticed anything that's shifted? Is it, are you approaching it different? Is there something different in school? Like, do you have a sense of what's helping her create this shift?
Yes. Well, it is, I do. And a lot of it is that she, the shift with, and this is a timely topic, is going through Sanity School. The one that really made the difference was the shifting expectations and recognizing that her ability to control herself, because in some ways she's an incredibly mature 9-year-old, and in other
right,
ways,
of course, that's the complex.
Really,
right.
Yeah. And so doing that, and then we just sort of recognizing, sort of really meeting her where she is and recognizing that what the naughty versus neurological was the other big, just thinking about it, that she's not trying to do these things and that, in fact, she's
so
really
what I want to
prefer.
Acknowledge you for is that you're seeing some significant changes in her behavior based on your awareness and shifting of your behavior.
Yes.
Okay. So I just want you to own it.
Yeah. Well, we're
okay.
I will. It has been
been
really great to see.
Because we forget
nice
sometimes, and oftentimes I hear parents that, you know, huge shifts, and then they go, well, you know, she must have just matured. No. You shifted your approach, and you got a different result, right? And I just want to make sure that you get the role you played in this.
Well, I had help because I had a control experiment in my husband, who is not taking the course and hadn't bought into any of the things that I was telling him about. And there was a period of time right when everything was shifting where he was out of town or working late at the office, and dinner time is a really tough time for us. And he wasn't around for dinner for like 2 weeks. And we did not have great manners, but we had a pleasant dinner that did not involve her spiraling out of control and, you know, turning into a... And the first night that he came back to dinner, I was like, oh, my goodness, he's not going to believe me these past 2 weeks. Because she saw him sitting at the table, and she immediately started acting up. And it was, like, so obvious that she knew that she was going to get into trouble. And so she was like, I am
so
going to
bring preemptively
bring
becoming,
it on.
Right, behaving. Right.
And so
I want to stop
has now
so
bought
it.
Because
I want to be mindful of time. But I do want to say, Brian, there may be a side business for you in communicating with people's husbands.
I know. I just need some referral fee here.
I'm telling you, I think that there may be some possibility. Okay, so that's a great celebration. And do you have a sense of where you want to take aim today?
Yes. So, and it's interesting what, is it Brian? I'm terrible with names.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, my 11-year-old, who's my oldest, is my son, and his emotional regulation over the past, it's never good, but it is just tanked over the past month or so. And so if something goes wrong or you speak to him in slightly the wrong tone of voice or you tell him that something is not quite right, he just either explodes in anger or dissolves in tears. And I'm feeling stumped and trying to shifting my expectations, I think, will work extremely well, but I just am sort of stuck at how to begin on that.
Okay, so let me ask you a question to help you narrow it. So your son is having a hard time with emotional regulation. Can you point to one specific time when that tends to happen? Is it hearing the word no? I mean, I get that it's any kind of disappointment, but can you sort of narrow that a little bit?
Into like one specific...
One time where it tends to happen frequently, so we can take aim a little more narrowly, because, you know, handling disappointment is pretty big, but handling disappointment when?
Right, and it's also shifting from one situation to another.
So during transition.
Yes, and the one that has really been difficult because it happens all the time and is going from coming home after his after school stuff and having a snack and playing Minecraft and then shifting from that to anything, to talking about his homework, not even doing it, but just mentioning that homework exists.
Can I stop you for a minute? So are you saying it's transition or is it actually getting off Minecraft?
Both, I think.
So let's narrow in. So I've heard three things.
Okay.
It's helping him manage disappointment, managing emotions during transitions, and managing emotions when getting off of Minecraft. Those are three different places to take aim. So which one of those three do you want to start with?
Let's do getting off of Minecraft.
Okay.
That seems.
Okay, got it. And what I want to make sure that you're hearing is that feels like one thing, right? But it's really a lot of different things. And the more narrow and specific you can get, the easier it is to get a plan around it.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So let me just touch on today's topic. I'm not going to spend a lot of time there because, you know, you've gone through Sanity School. Brian's been here for a while. So we all sort of have a sense of what we mean by shifting expectations. But I think, you know, when we talk about hitting the highlights of it, what's most important about shifting expectations is that we're not talking about lowering them. We are talking about kids with developmental delays, and the whole effort behind shifting expectations is to meet them where they are and to understand what they're going through developmentally where they are, not where we think they should be. And I think that we have this tendency, you know, both of you have mentioned at one point or another that you have a child who is in some way more mature than his or her age, and then in other ways less mature than his or her age. And that is, while that's typical of all kids, that's particularly typical of our kids. And so just recognizing that we have to let go of the outside world's shoulds so that we can really help this particular child develop according to his or her development. That piece in and of itself is huge. And when we have this tendency to look at that and say, but they should be able to, right? Because their peers can, or because they're smart enough to, or because they look like they can, or, you know, and the opportunity is to step out of the shoulds, everybody's shoulds, and to really shift to see where this kid is. And that's not to say that he won't be capable of handling disappointment, or it won't. It's not to say that she won't be able to manage the complexities of her life as she goes off to college and has to manage life and work and balance. But that we have to meet her where she is right now and say, here's what she is capable of now. How do we help her get to the next step instead of only looking at, well, this is where we want her to get to at the end game, and she's not there. So shifting expectations is not lowering them. It's modifying them. It's sort of the big picture of meeting them where they are and helping them mature appropriately and reasonably from where they are in a way that doesn't feel overwhelming for them and doesn't feel impossible for them, so that we're setting them up for success instead of that unintended tendency we have to set our kids up for failure by setting the bar too high. So I'm going to stop and just sort of open it up and say, let's talk about that for a couple of minutes and then see how it relates to each of your kids' issues.
Well, for me, I think it's interesting. I mentioned that, you know, the shifting expectations, it's actually an exercise we went through with our daughter kind of just last Sunday on a couple of problem areas that we found she was having. One was kind of like keeping her room clean. It became a complete disaster. And so this weekend, you know, my wife kind of went through and said, okay, listen, I'm going to help you get these clothes up off the floor and get stuff through the wash. And she's got herself so far behind on it, she couldn't see the way forward of how to get the room clean. And the other's kind of taking care of her dog. But we sit down and said, okay, let's talk about what really is workable and where you're going to have other things during the week. And instead of just saying this has to accomplish by the end of the weekend, that's maybe really a bad time to measure it, because suddenly everything piles up and you can't see your way forward to get stuff done. So, you know, with that, it's like, okay, what does make sense? Instead of your dog needs exercise, what exactly does that mean, and what are we going to expect? And we, you know, went to a very detailed that, okay, let's make a plan, because then you can, you know, if things change, you can change your plan, but let's define what that means and when those times are. And we came up with, you know, it means at least 2 miles walk or run 3 times a week. And then we picked the days. You know, one is Wednesday afternoon, and the others are before noon on Saturday and Sunday. And then with the room, you know, trying to think about how we keep it clean instead of going just once a week, has to be done by the end of the weekend, that bottles up with suddenly, you know, you're behind on homework, you got to get homework done, you got stress getting ready for the rest of the week, you know, all that kind of stuff, and then it kind of goes by the wayside on Sunday. We said that it kind of needs to be done before she could go out and do anything social on Saturday evening. The room needs to be clean, but to help get to that goal, you know, she's going to bring down and do, just run through a load of laundry on Tuesdays and Saturdays to keep the kind of keep the clutter from mounting up rather than waiting for everything at once. And then we'll kind of help her with just some organization stuff in the room.
So let me stop you for a second. So what you're sharing sort of the plan you went through, right?
Yep.
So what are the pieces of shifting expectations? If you pull out of the details.
So the pieces here were shifting expectations from just saying you need to do X and expecting that she would understand the component parts of getting X done and have her own plan to do it, to helping her break down what those parts were, specifically identify them, and then putting together and making it an incremental process to accomplish X. So we shifted the expectation. One, and part of the expectation was rather just think that she can do all that herself, we shifted the expectation. She's obviously showing signs she needs help designing this plan. So we shifted that, we changed it, we made it a group project, And then the other expect, you know, the expectation, one, you're not just going to do it on yourself, we tell you to do it. And the other is, you know, expectation of how to accomplish it in incremental parts.
Mm-hmm. So the first place you set the expectation was that she would be able to, you shifted that she would somehow or should somehow be able to recognize what was going on in the first place.
Right. What
right.
The
so
idea
you were,
that
you
clean
identified
your room
for
has,
her. Right.
Yes.
What the context was, because oftentimes what happens is they get to a point where they're so overwhelmed, know what they should do, but they have no clue how to get out of it.
They have no
right.
clue how to start. And also the question is, have you really defined what they should do? Because does to what, if you tell her your room needs to be clean, her definition of what her room needs to be clean may not entail the same things that we're thinking it entails.
Exactly, right. So there, it's not about setting expectations, it's about communicating them really clearly and making
yes.
sure everybody knows what those expectations are instead of sort of making
assumptions. And then going from that part to saying, okay, even once we define it, can you just, if we just say, now we've defined it, go complete it, do you kind of have the executive functioning to make that happen? How can we simplify the process for getting what
mm-hmm.
we've now defined as the task done?
Right. Yep, got it. So, Evie, what's coming up for you?
What's coming up for me is I'm sort of not, I'm having a hard time thinking about what expectation I'm having. I mean, I know the expectation I'm having is that he should be able to just stop playing Minecraft and move on to something else.
So let's not apply it to
don't,
try not to apply it to your to the scenario first. Just let's pull back initially and go. So what are you thinking about? What's coming up for you about just this notion of shifting expectations? You had said earlier that it's been really powerful for you, that it's really made a big difference. What is it about it that's so helpful?
Well, I mean, I think my kids react to feeling like they can't do something, that they don't know how to do it, or that it's too much, or that I'm asking too much, or with defiance and anger. And
mm-hmm.
so not having, meeting them where they are more, instead of making them feel like they should be able to do something that they don't feel like they can, just takes away a lot of the sort of anger and the awfulness that can come up when they're
so it reduces a huge amount of pressure on them.
Yes, and
okay,
which is I feel bad that there's so much pressure and that it that they respond that way. And I think part of it is that they're all three of them really, really good in school in terms of behavior, in terms of keeping it together, in terms of emotional regulation, all of it. They
hold
don't
it
let
together.
Any of it out at school. And so I think then to have that added pressure, I think they just, any kind of feeling like they can't do it, they spend all day working on things that are really hard for them. And then when they come home, it's that much more weighty when they have to do it at home too. And so I think that's why it works out so well to sort of back off on them, is because they've
been holding it together.
Yeah. And it,
yeah.
it makes them feel like home is not yet one other place where they can't meet expectations.
Right.
Although they are meeting the expectations, but that it's hard to meet the expectations.
Right. So there's a lot of sort of built-up pressure that they're dealing with that you're
yeah.
aware of, that you're becoming more aware of. Okay. So releasing
yeah.
the pressure valve is huge.
Right.
Okay. Anything else for either of you sort of show up sort of generally about this issue of shifting expectations. Okay.
Well, it also is hard. That's my other.
Yeah. Hard for them
really
or for you?
For me, it's hard to let go of the shoulds, and it's hard to sort of not worry about what it means that I'm having to sort of walk them through this now. And, it, you know, it's hard to hold on to the confidence, even with this really dramatic change. It's hard to hold on to the confidence that, like, they are not going to be 25 and need me to help them pick up their room or, you know, manage their emotions or whatever it is that they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So
what are you most afraid of?
I mean, I think I'm most afraid that what if all of this is wrong and in fact I'm enabling them and they are going to be 25 and unable to take care of themselves. And I don't actually really believe that, or I wouldn't be here, obviously. But mm-hmm. that's my sort of fear that I have to fight against.
So what I hear in that, I mean, yes, there's a what if, but I also hear a fear of, the fear is that they're not going to be able to be independent.
Yeah. I mean, they're reasonably independent, but yeah, that they're, you know.
But that's your fear.
My son is never going to learn how to eat so that he's not revolting to other people. Or
right. Great. So then,
but yes,
fear
that's my fear.
The never ever, right?
Yeah, the never ever.
And so what I'm hearing is there's a connection between the fear and the expectations.
Yeah.
That somehow that fear leads me to set expectations that, right?
Right. And then I have to think about it and be like, oh, yeah, nope, and meet them and back down. But, yeah.
So I think what I'm hearing, though, which is interesting and maybe useful, is that the expectations that you're dealing with aren't other people's expectations. They're actually your own.
Yeah. Yes, but they're based on other people's expectations. I mean, in the sense that it's hard to have my kids, and every time I talk about the difficulties my kids have at home with anybody who sees them at school or at other people's houses or anything like that, people are like, oh my goodness, what are you talking about? This is not. And so it's hard to have kids who don't appear to have difficulties, but really do, if that.
Yes.
Like.
Believe me, we know what you mean.
They look to the
outside world like they're so capable.
Yes.
Right? And what you're saying to me, actually, and this is what I hope you can see, is that they are that capable. At this point, their capacity may not be to be that capable 24/7, but they can pull it together and hold it together when they need to. And then they come home, and it's like, I'm done. I can't hold it together anymore. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So if you know that they have the capacity, how does that shift the fear about they're never going to be able to?
Well, that does help with the fear.
Okay.
But it also brings in the, you know, the what if I'm wrong and I'm just letting them behave badly because I'm not strict enough or I'm not, you know, asking enough of them. And that the reason that they behave like they do in school is because they're expected to and they have the consequences if they don't, as opposed to mm-hmm. that they're not capable of.
So when your daughter was when the expectations were as high at home as they were at school, how was she behaving?
Yeah, she was behaving horribly. So
why do you think that is?
Because I think that this is right, and that she was that the expectations were too high. I just worry.
Okay.
But
so there are two different issues. So one is dealing with them, and the other is dealing with your own worry.
Right. And
right.
Largely, yeah. And largely, they fortunately have made some really obvious changes that I can hold on to whenever my worry gets too strong. I can be like, no, back it off, because look at what has happened. They're sleeping
look
in
at
the
what's
same
happened.
Bed.
Right.
Yeah.
So
largely my worry is manageable.
There's a professor at Yale Harvard named Jerry Schultz, who's done some webinars for us, and there's a webinar on ADHD and anxiety in our webinar library. His name is Jerome Schultz. And one of the things that he talks about in his model, and I love him. I think he's great. I think his model is a little complicated, personally. But it's a really good webinar. And one of the things he talks about is that the nature of anxiety is to sort of know but not know. It's like you know, but you're not really sure, even though you have evidence to prove it otherwise.
Right.
And so he talks about for kids actually pulling an example of some place where they've been successful, like taking one of their best papers or tests or whatever and putting it away so that when they begin to doubt themselves, you can sort of pull it out and physically show it to them and help them see, like to help them challenge their own anxiety around this, whatever the issue is they're doubting. And so that may be something useful for you, is to sort of take some structure from the success you've seen in the last weeks and externalize it for yourself as a reminder. Like, what represents to you the value that you've seen, the shift you've seen? I mean, maybe it's taking a picture of your kids curled up in bed together.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
Right.
That would do it.
Yeah.
And then I can have it.
And have it, put it someplace, make it your desktop, put it on your phone, do something to remind yourself, to give yourself that external reminder that this stuff works.
Yeah.
And you've seen it work.
Yes.
And in coaching, we call that a structure.
Okay.
Right? It's something, it's a reminder of some sort. So will you do that?
Yes, I will do that.
Awesome.
I think I even took a picture of that time. So.
Awesome.
I will.
There you go.
I'll do that right now. I mean, not right now,
okay.
But on the phone cover.
So, and, I often tell the story about when my oldest daughter, who's now 23, when she was 13, she was bat mitzvah. And we did it very non-traditionally, up in the mountains, at a camp, in the woods, outdoor. I mean, she was not a traditional kid, and it was not a traditional bat mitzvah. But in that weekend, there was this moment of poise where I saw her future. And I saw, for the first time truly in her life, her capability. And for the first time realized she probably wasn't going to live at home for the rest of her life. And so I think the other thing I would offer to you, and this is to both of you for your different issues, so Brian, for you as well with your daughter, is to see that capacity and sort of let it wash over you a little bit, remind you that you see these glimmers and moments of their potential. And they're not fully cooked, right? They're young. Is still young. 11 is still young, right? And so to sort of take those moments when you do see their poise or their capacity, or when some other adult tells you something that they've done and you kind of go, wow, and as well, and just sort of remember that this is part of that journey for them and for you. And that, I think, also lets us sort of let go of the expectations a little bit at home and not hold so tight, because you know that that capacity is there. And what we're really trying to do is to cultivate it for them to be accessing it always instead of just in bits and spurts. So, Brian, if we sort of turn to what's happening with your daughter, I mean, it's a classic situation. She's got a lot on her plate. She's a busy, active high school athlete, right, with you know, modeling, with all this other stuff going on. She's got a lot to navigate and juggle, and she's going to drop some balls. And that's normal. I mean, as adults, we drop balls with as much on our plate as she's got, right? But so
true.
To set the expectation that it's normal that she's going to drop some balls, and it's really okay to stand there and pick them up and throw it back to her, but to just keep holding that vision of, wow, look at what she can do, and okay, so she dropped a ball, but look at how great that juggling is, and let's help her continue to grow it instead of stay in that place of fear around it. Does that resonate?
Right. No, it does, and it's something I try to do with all my kids. And actually, I've got a great picture from last night when she was reading to the three-year-old. She's reading "Guess How Much I Love You" to him after she'd gone through this hysterical crying fit because her friend's dad, who had a kite skiing, I think is what they call it, accident last summer, and now they're going to pull the plug on his ventilator. And there were people gathered there, and she was there the night before. But then, like last night, her friend didn't text her to come over and help support her. So how could that not happen? And it was just a bizarre thing that she had been sobbing about and kind of some other woe is me stuff. Then she's suddenly sitting there being a wonderful big sister and reading to the three-year-old on the couch. So I've got that picture. And then I also just, you know, personally – the things I try to do from her, I did a father-daughter retreat with her where the verse we celebrate, I'll get, you know, a little bit religious on you here for a moment. And, you know, this one will actually work for you because it's Old Testament stuff, so it's common for you, but the one for the boys won't, because I'm going to go all New Testament here,
okay.
You know.
I was raised a good Episcopalian, just so you know. So.
Right. So for the girls, we chose the verse of Psalms 139, 13, 14, which really centers on the fact that everyone is unique and beautiful in God's eyes as a special purpose of why they're created, right? That you're created for a purpose, and kind of that whole thought of, as amazing as the world is, isn't it incredible that God thought it wouldn't be complete without you, right? So you are beautiful, unique, and special and have a purpose. That's for the girls. And for the boys, it's the Mark 1:11, which, you know, after Christ was baptized, who is, you know, the Savior of the world. I know you don't understand this whole thing, but he fulfilled all the prophets and promises of the Old Testament. I'm kidding you, Elaine. But,
I'm with you.
You know,
more than you realize.
The verse from Mark 1:11 is as he comes up out of the water, the voice from the heavens above says, "This is my beloved Son with whom I'm well pleased." So for my boys, I try to remember that one, and then I try to remember, you know, that you are unique and beautiful as created for my daughter. So that's a really helpful thing for me. And then, again, like you said, if you can have that visual image, it's always great to – if in those moments when you're about to go berserk because your kid can't break away from the Minecraft and they've been playing, you know, for 2 hours and 40 minutes and that's not long enough, if you can pause and put that in your memory, it really helps to reset the expectations. And also when you start getting to that catastrophizing phase where you're like, you know, my kid's going to be 25 years old and eating from vending machines because they can't make food for themselves and won't be able to hold down a job because they will play Minecraft for 2 hours and 40 minutes rather than go to their job in the morning, it really helps to reset and shift those. It gives you a chance to reset yourself, and then that allows you to deal in a more calm mode and really reset those expectations.
You know, and so here's totally yes to everything you just said.
Yes.
And what's jumping out at me is that we're talking a lot about shifting expectations for ourselves. And what I want to sort of plant maybe as homework for you is to look in terms of how are we translating this conversation to our kids? Like, how are we – what's the value or opportunity in helping our kids begin to shift expectations And, you know, to know that, of course, it's frustrating to have to get off Minecraft when you really are having a great time and making progress and you don't want to leave it. And, of course, it's overwhelming to try to tackle all of these things in your life with so many expectations and having to do things that everybody wants you to do plus what you want to do at 17. Like, for us to sort of normalize for them that this is hard stuff. And that we are making choices and that there is time to do it all if we give ourselves the time. And to sort of bring this awareness you're using that's helping you to the kids in ways that are appropriate to help them. Does that resonate for either of you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a huge part of it. Because, you know, as much as we're doing therapy for our kids, it's also therapy for us and the behavior training model is behavior training for the parents too. So we're trying to help them make that breakthrough.
Yeah. And so helping them set realistic expectations for themselves is huge. And the rest of the world, and that's not to say, again, that we're lowering the bar, but that to say, yes, it is hard. Yes, it is challenging to stop when you're loving something. Yes, it's hard to feel loving when you're not feeling appreciated. You know, whatever it is, that can help to begin to shift that conversation for the kids as well. So we're sort of coming near the end of time. I'm curious if you'll sort of take a minute to ask yourselves, what do you feel like you were focusing on today? And what are you taking away? What's your aha from this conversation?
I think the aha thing for me was, you know, I really feel good about what we did with our daughter on Sunday, and it really wasn't that hard. It really actually was easy, and everybody felt very positive on it. And just to remember that, you know, as much as we think it's so hard parenting sometimes, it is, but we make it harder when we don't make it easier on ourselves, if that made any sense.
Yeah,
so
well,
just think about,
you made it easier by giving yourself permission to do it.
Right.
Yeah. So much permission here. What about you, Evie? What are you taking away?
Well, I think the sort of reminder, the reminder that they are capable, just not all the time, and that is okay, and you know, they will get more capable for more of the time and not less capable if I release the pressure at home.
Mm-hmm.
That it's and taking the picture that I have of the girls and just having that as my desktop or on my phone or whatever to remind me that it is working and it will continue to be that way.
Yeah, brilliant. So any commitment to action that either of you want to take?
I think my commitment is to start acknowledging to my son that it is really hard to have to stop with the Minecraft for whatever it is that he's doing.
Yeah.
That is inevitably less fun than Minecraft.
Have you heard the ACE principle or the ACE technique that we teach?
I have, but I have forgotten it. So
ACE is great for this. It's okay. Acknowledgement, compassion, and then explore your options. Acknowledgement and compassion first. And we didn't make it up. We sort of discovered it because we realized we were doing it. And we were each doing it differently, and we sort of, that's where we came up with it, because it was something that was just working for each of us and for a lot of our clients.
Excellent.
So use ACE. Yeah. And Brian, what about you? Any commitment?
Within the ACE, I think the biggest thing to take away from me to make sure we apply is that I'm not just implementing a solution that works for me. I need to get their buy-in to the solution,
yep.
right? And it's a partnership because I got to acknowledge and have compassion and make sure that, as I say, well, this is easy. Just do X, Y, and Z. They X, Y, and Z have to work for them.
Exactly. 100%. Beautifully done. All right, gang. This was fascinating. Thank you for the time and the engagement.
Thank you.
I hope as you step into a December, which is always a little chaotic, that that you shift your expectations for yourselves as well as for your kids in the coming weeks and give yourself a little bit of peace, cut yourself a little bit of slack, and remember to enjoy the ride.
Thank